And welcome back once again for the 351st installment of the Parish of the Patriots. Grandpa Dan, as always, your host for the show, which I think is unique in its own right here on the vast expanses of the internet. Whatever reason you've chosen to tune in today, I appreciate you tuning in. Whether you're a regular member or this is your first time stopping by, I hope if it is your first time stopping by, you'll take a listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon somewhat, if you would. The Christian-specific discussion happens roughly around the halfway point of the show. I do try to keep them segregated so that, you know, if that's just absolutely something you can't allow for or whatever, you can listen to the first part of the show. But if you don't listen to the second part of the show, you're missing out on the meat of the show. It's a good thing. We're going to have a really good discussion on today's Christian-specific segment. It's one of those discussions I'm probably going to make some people mad. So I just go ahead and forewarn you. Some people may listen to today's Christian-specific topic and be like, that's it. Never again. But it's all good. It's just doing the best. Speak the truth. And do what we do. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy to pay those tithes. We got snail mail. That's it. There is no other. You don't have to figure out cryptocurrency. We got snail mail. Look here on the description page for the show and you'll see it right there. Address an envelope. And put a little something in there. It is always very much appreciated. And we got one. We got a listener supporter mailbag. Hey, this is a good way to get your notes read on the show. Sometimes I have to edit that out because people write really long stuff. I did, no offense, you know, we got to keep rolling. You know, if you write something really crazy and outrageous, I'm not going to sit there and read that. I'm sorry, but I've never had that problem. I've not. Y'all are great. And so, again, I do really appreciate it. So, listener supporter mailbag, GPD, this probably won't get to you before Thanksgiving, but I wish you and yours a happy and bountiful one. All the best. That's from Jackie. Thank you very much, Jackie. And you know, you didn't miss Thanksgiving by much. If the mail would have been running, you probably would have made it. I'm recording this not usually on my usual weekend recording. I'm doing this on Monday, the day before the show airs. So, you did, like I say, you didn't miss Thanksgiving by much. You know, I do. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. This is that time of the year. You got Thanksgiving. You got Christmas coming along. And I see all these things. I see people going on, you know, about how much they just hate being around their family. I don't get that. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Look, everybody got family stuff. You got family members you don't want to deal with. That's normal. I get all that. But, you know, that's always been normal. You know, you think people three generations ago, they didn't have family members that they found personally irritating? What I do find amazing, though, is those people back then could just put it aside for one day. Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, the holidays when people get together. You know, and now people today, they go on social media. Y'all know I hate social media. I do. But, you got these people that run and do everything on social media. You know, I find it amazing because people tell me about it. I'm not on social media. I don't even have clandestine accounts on social media. But people come up and they tell me, they be like, man, do you see this on social media? Look at this. Look at this. Look at this TikTok. Look at somebody posting on Facebook. And it amazed me because people would go on there and like air all their personal laundry. Women especially. But men too. But women especially. Like, a woman will have some kind of silly, petty spat with her husband, and she goes straight to TikTok to rant about what an asshole he is. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with these people? In the old times, you say not to dare, you know, don't air out your dirty laundry. Public. They air out everything in public now. And you got these people anyway, they go on social media and they're going on and on about how stressful it is. They have to deal with it. Family. I gotta go deal with my family. Oh, my gosh, it's horrible. I'm having to deal with my family. It was always funny because those people are never real specific about what's so awful. You know, it's always just they don't like the way they make them feel. They're never specific. You know? It's always some vague thing. I just can't stand being around my family. Probably some silly, petty bullshit. You know, Then don't. Because if you have that attitude, if you don't like being around your family that bad, then don't. You know, I mean, the rest of your family probably breathe a sigh of relief that Aunt Karen isn't coming this year to act like a bitch to everybody at the table who's just trying to get along. You just, then don't grace them with your presence. Stay at home with your cats and drink your damn wine by yourself. The world for everybody else is going to keep rolling on. But I don't get that whole thing. You're like, oh my gosh, I can't stand to be around my family. The hell is wrong with people? You know, your family, you know, especially your immediate family. You know, these are the people you grew up with as a kid, and you're going to have differences. And as you become adults, you go off, your life takes different paths. You know, you go in different directions. And yeah, I mean, sometimes you're going to wind up with very divergent views, but everybody should be adult enough to leave that aside when you get together, because those are still the people you grew up with, the people that raised you, whatever the case may be. You know, you should be able to put that aside. You know, set that aside for today and just, you know, get together and chuckle about old times or whatever. It's a couple hours out of the year. You should be able to handle that. Yeah, my family. Yeah, and of course you have the Trump derangement people. Yeah, I won't go. They're on social media. I'm not going to my family's Thanksgiving because I found out that this family member voted for Trump. Shut the hell up. Hey, it didn't make any difference. It don't make no difference. You ain't getting nothing different now under Trump than you gotten under Kamala. Pretending like no one gives a shit about your politics. Just get together and laugh about that time you were kids and you built a fort in the backyard or some games you used to play or climbing up the fruit tree and you fell out and broke your arm or whatever the hell else. Nobody gives a shit about your politics. Night. These people you grew up around, you spent your childhood, your formative years around, and they're the people that are going to grow old right alongside of you. I mean, you may, you know, I'd say that figuratively, but you're going to watch them get older. They're going to watch you get older. And eventually they're going to start dying off, you know, as you get older. And with any sort of wisdom and hindsight, your little petty problems, your disagreements are going to seem really, really silly in hindsight. People get, you know, their families get fractured. You know, I don't speak to my siblings. I don't speak to my parents. I don't speak to my children. Why? What was the big thing? And then when they tell you, you're like, really? That's the reason? That seems kind of silly. I remember speaking to somebody years ago, and I don't even remember. I don't remember off the top of my head what they were having a big split with their family. I don't even remember what it was over. But they were telling me, you know, they hadn't spoke to their parents in 2 years or some shit. And, you know, then of course, they had to go on to me about, you know, how justified they were because how wrong their mom and daddy did them. And, you know, and when it was all said and done, I looked at them and I said, well, you know, they're old now. And in a matter of a few years, they're probably going to be dead. And when you're standing there at the funeral and you hadn't talked to them in however many years, all of that you're talking about is going to seem really silly. It's going to really, you're going to feel like that was a really stupid thing to sit there and not have anything to do with them over in hindsight. Because once they're gone, they're gone. You can't patch nothing up. They're gone, you're gone. If you got a family, this isn't even what I was going to talk about today. I just kind of got off on it. This is why I love the listener supporter mailbag. It gets me going in directions I had no intention of going into. Look, if you're estranged from your family, you know, over some petty bullshit, you know, look, I mean, if you were 7 years old and your uncle raped you, yeah, don't have anything to do with that asshole. I'm not telling you to patch up things with him. That's an extreme, rare sort of thing. Most people's fissures within their family are over things that honestly are petty nonsense. If you have a division, especially your immediate family, you know, your siblings or your parents or your children, whatever the case may be, you know, even if you're 100% in the right, just swallow it and reach out. You know, just reach out to them. Send them a Christmas card and put a note in there that, you know, look, I don't want to talk to you again. And I don't want to talk about this thing that we're split over. I want to hear how you're doing. You know? Because more than likely, they'll take you up on that. And then when you patch things up several years down the road, as you watch them get older, or you yourself perhaps get older and closer to death, you're going to look back on that and you're going to be really glad you did. You're going to say that was a good thing. I'm really glad I did that because I didn't lose these years. I regret that I lost the years that I did, but I didn't lose any more. I'm glad I reached out. This is where humility benefits you. You have to swallow your pride and be the one to reach out. Maybe you were completely in the right in your argument and your disagreement that has led to your estrangement with your family. Maybe you're 100% in the right. But if you make the effort and it bears fruit, you're never going to regret it. In the moment, it's hard to do, but you're not going to regret it. You're going to be glad. If they rebuff you, you reach out and try to open things up and they send you a hateful response of screw you, I'm still never talking to you again. So be it. Your conscience is clear then. You made the effort. And so down the road, when reproachment is no longer an option because somebody has passed on, you at least can say, I tried. You know, as you look back and you're tempted to regret the estrangement, you can at least say, well, I can't really blame myself. I tried. I reached out. I made an effort to put this aside and they still rebuffed me. I mean, my conscience is clear in this matter. It's going to mean a lot to you. It'll mean a lot to you down the road. Because I hate this thing where people run out and get on social media. Every little grievance. They all go out there, air their dirty laundry, sell off their integrity for a few likes, a few upvotes, a few reposts. It is funny. I find it humorous when they do this trolling for sympathy, you know, and people are like, wow, you're acting like a real asshole. And then they're all upset. And they live by the upvote, die by the upvote, I guess. I don't know. But it does. It brings out the absolute worst in people. It does. And it's not it, like if you had social media and did away with upvoting thing, you know, where people couldn't get upvotes and it didn't track how many people liked or even followed or whatever. You just put it out there and people could respond or not. I think social media would be a lot more healthy. Instead of people sitting there chasing these upvotes. This goes back to this notion people want to be some kind of celebrity, you know, in their own mind at least. They just stir up their own personal drama. But anyway, like I say, I didn't even intend to get off in that today, but it is what it is. What else we got going on? Trump's still blowing up boats in the Caribbean with this quote-unquote terror attack. Washington, D.C. Two National Guards people were shot. People, because I think one of them was a woman. And she died. I need to stop and check. Like I said, I'm recording this on Monday morning. I don't know if the guy that got shot died or not. I hadn't looked. I hadn't seen anything about it. And I'm too lazy to go look it up because I don't care that much. Not being unfeeling. I'm sure those people's families care. I'm not diminishing that. I'm not going to diminish it by pretending like I'm personally emotionally moved over something happening to people I don't know. That's fake. I'm not doing that. But anyway, these two National Guard people were shot. And it's so crazy to me. Trump puts these National Guard people out on the streets of Washington, D.C., of all these other places. And they're just there as a, quote unquote, as a deterrence. They don't have any police authority. They're just walking around out there. Now, this guy shoots these two people, and I'll get into that here in a minute with this guy, which it reeks of false flaggery, in my opinion. But this guy shoots these two people. So Trump now says he's going to put more national guard. But I saw a story the other day. It said they're going to start having the D.C. police escorting the National Guard. They're start escorting the National Guard people around. So he puts these people out here, puts the National Guard people out here. They don't have any police powers to really do anything. They could get on the radio and say, hey, there's a guy, you know, breaking into a building over here. Y'all might want to come over here, but they can't go do anything. And now the police have got to start escorting them around so nothing happens to them. I mean, really, what is this supposed to do? If the National Guard walking around by themselves and they see somebody breaking into a building and they confront them, they don't have any police authority to do anything. But let's say they say, well, the police ain't going to get here in time. Let's go detain this guy. We'll think of it as a military / citizen's arrest or some shit. And they go out there and the guy pulls a gun. Now you got a case. Either the National Guard people are going to get shot or they're going to shoot this civilian. Neither of which is going to be an optimal outcome, is it? I don't understand the point of this. It's more political theater. Now, very well could be the point of it is this is supposed to happen. And then they can say, Trump people can say, well, we've got to authorize the National Guard to start shooting these people. Now you've escalated to a whole nother level. And maybe some of these war zone cities, that seems like a reasonable thing to do. I'm not even going to argue that. But you're that much closer to martial law now. You know, I mean, you see the direction, because I tend to try to be, I'm one of those people, I like to stand back and look at the big picture, not look at things as isolated things. So you look at this in the context of ICE agents running around with balaclavas on, you know, with their faces all covered up like terrorists, you know, like, you know, like they always try to demonize Hamas because they walking around with masks on. You got ICE agents dressed like Hamas, just with different uniforms, and they grabbing randos off the street and stuffing them in a van. They normalize that. And now you got the National Guard out here. Now some of them got shot. So at some point they're going to say the answer to this is, because the idea now you got to have the police hold their hand and walk around, make sure nobody shoots them. And instead of the police being out maybe preventing crime, they're guarding the National Guard, who aren't there to do anything anyway. At some point, maybe with that absurdity, say, well, the answer is we got to authorize the National Guard to arrest and / start shooting these people. And, you know, in a high crime area, people will be like, yeah, good, let them start shooting people. But it never ends there, does it? See, it never ends there. I don't know. You know, you look at the context of where this is inching toward. At some point in time, they're going to say, well, what we're going to have to do, that we're going to have to authorize the National Guard people to start shooting criminals. Now, when I saw this, I thought, you know, I mean, the Washington, D.C., I thought maybe these, you know, they didn't really give a lot of context at first. And I'm thinking maybe these National Guards were walking up on a drug deal or something and somebody panicked and, you know, running off, started shooting at them or something. But then it turns out the guy that allegedly did this is an Afghan national. And when you get into how he got here in this country, well, he was one of the ones helping our heroes in Afghanistan. He was one of the collaborators he was working with. He worked with the CIA and he's a former CIA asset and worked with the military in the occupation in Afghanistan. First red flag. There is no such thing as former CIA. When somebody says, oh, I've got this guy on my show, we're going to interview him, he's a former CIA. There's no such thing as former CIA. You know, they may not be officially on the employment records anymore, but they're never former CIA. They're always CIA. There's first big red flag. This guy is a CIA asset who decided to fly across the country to Washington, D.C. to shoot two rando National Guardsmen. Makes sense. I mean, if we were still occupied, I don't have anything to do with it. If the U.S. government was still using the military to occupy Afghanistan and this guy did not like what the U.S. military was doing in his home country and came in here, say, across the southern border or maybe even legally as a refugee and then took up his own personal jihad against the U.S. government, that would, you could say that makes sense. But the U.S. isn't occupying Afghanistan anymore. This guy's not anything to do with the Taliban. He was a CIA asset, collaborator with the U.S. occupation. He was given citizenship here. He was allowed to come here on asylum. They brought him into the country. I mean, what was his grievance? Did they not give him an Obama phone? I mean, what was his grievance exactly that would make him decide to go across the country to shoot two rando National Guards people? The whole thing smells, doesn't it? And again, when you step back and look at the big picture of how things are moving, this moves things into, well, we're going to have no choice but to authorize these National Guards to defend themselves. If these guardsmen would have been quick on the draw and gunned this guy down, maybe lives could have been saved. You see the push. They're normalizing masked federal agents shoving you in a van. It always cracks me up when people applaud this stuff, too. You know, the other cultists, you have the Trump derangement cultists who act like everything they don't like in the country just started under Trump. And then you have the red hat cultists that, you know, the man can do no wrong. He's practically the second coming of Jesus. It kills me when people cheer this on. Look at this. They're stuffing some rando illegal into a van. For starters, you have no idea if he's an illegal. They're just telling you that, and their track record of telling you the truth is sketchy at best. But if you think it's just going to stop there, you normalize that. Then what? This guy is accused of anti-Semitism. Send the masked goons to stuff him into a van. Where do these people wind up in? Where do they wind up going after they're stuffed in a van? I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. Are they going to a detention center? Are they being flown to a black prison site? Maybe over to the same prison in Israel where they stuffed the Palestinians and they would stuff all the anti-Semites in there together. You normalize it, it becomes normalized. You go along with the normalization of this. It's 100% guaranteed it's going to come around and bite you in the ass. I see people, you know, Trump has issued this now. There's a moratorium. He's talking about he's going to kick these people out. These Afghanistan people that they let come into the country. And I see people countering that and saying, hey, these are people that fought with our heroes. They fought alongside our heroes and America's cause. You know, it's wrong to throw them out of the country. It always amazes me how these debates get structured to make them, keep them within a framework. These guys hated the Taliban. They fought with America's soldiers against the Taliban, and you're just going to leave them there? You're not supposed to ask the question, why did they hate the Taliban? Why were they in such conflict with the Taliban? Well, let's see. The Taliban, we do know that the Taliban, you know, doesn't allow things like, I don't know, drug dealing. You know, I remember it's been years ago, but I was reading they were talking about the types of people that were siding with America against the Taliban, and it was the utter degenerates of Afghan society. The opium peddlers, you know, the kitty diddlers. I mean, the ones that are being quote unquote persecuted by the Taliban for reasons that if you get into it, it's like, yeah, maybe they deserve to be persecuted by the Taliban. But point being, aside from these people fought aside America's heroes, you have to say, well, what is the overall character of a lot of these people? You know, I get that people, you know, were over there in the military and they had a personal relationship with these people and they don't want to leave them behind. That's understandable. I get where people feel that way. But at some point in time, you got to quit doubling down on the bad decision. You know, I mean, the reality is America's heroes should have never been over there in the first place. And now you just keep doubling down on the bad decisions. Well, now we got to bring these people. There are, you notice we never run out of reasons to bring people from these other countries here, do we? There's always some reason. Well, it's because they're poor. Oh, they'll be persecuted in their home countries. Oh, well, we went there and attacked their country for no discernible good reason at all. And these people helped us attack their country for reasons that always never seem to get explained. And so now we have to bring them here. The answer is always, we got to bring them here. We got to bring them here. Let's bring them here. It's kind of like I said on a show here a while back. Their answer is always the same. More migration. We got to have more immigrants. I always keep the discussion within the same framework. They may sound, a lot of times you'll hear people and they sound like they're talking outside of the framework. But if you step back and listen to what they say, it's still in the framework. You know, we got to have these people come in. We can't just abandon them. The decision to be there in the first place was a bad decision. It was a wrong decision. And now you're just basically doubling it down, double down on it. I guarantee you we're probably never going to hear anything else about this guy. Because he's a former CIA asset, former, who just decided one day to go across the country and go shoot two rando National Guards. Sure. Okay. We'll probably never hear anything else about this guy. Wonder why that, yeah, and it's not hard to figure out the reason why. So what lessons could we take around? Don't join the military. Don't join the National Guard. Why would you do that? I really don't. Don't do that. I don't understand why anybody would do that. I don't understand why anybody would look at the government today and say, yeah, I want to be a part of enforcing that on people. You know, this, I look at this government and yeah, I want to be the strong arm for them. Whether it's shooting people that have done nothing to you on, you know, in their country, or maybe potentially shooting people here in this country, because that's the direction it's going in. You look at this direction. Get outside of the framework, get outside of the cultist mentality. Trump's making our streets safe again, okay? Are you going to also not pay attention to the fact that he's, what, appointing like an anti-Semitism czar or something? Come on. It is not hard to figure out where these sorts of things are going. And once you start normalizing and enabling these things, it's not hard to figure out the road you're on. It's not a very good road. It's not very nice. It's not very nice at all. What is nice, we're going to get into the Christian specific segment. It will be good. It might be offensive. I don't know. You'll have to listen to it and see for yourself. But let's go ahead and do it. Let's get into this week's Christian specific segment. You know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into the Christian specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots. The Christian specific segment is something, as a feature here at the Parish of the Patriots, that I think is pretty unique, that sets this show apart from shows that a lot of other people are doing. Now, I've heard arguments that discussions of religion sow division. I've heard it said, I've heard on podcasts before, I've heard statement along the lines of, well, you know, Christianity or not, it is fine. But what we need to do is save our nations first. We need to regain our nations and secure a future for our people. Then, after that, because that's the important work, then after that, we can have a discussion about topics such as religion. Then we can iron out what role religion should play in our society. And that's fine and well. Look, I'm not downing anybody. Everybody, you know, anybody can start a podcast. Anybody can say what they want to say, and they're entitled to their opinions. I just so happen to think that opinion is very wrong on a number of reasons. And I'm going to get into that a little bit today. For starters, of course, I think that it's a really good example of truly believing and versus having your faith is basically nothing more than yet another tradition, just because you know, your ancestors, your generations that came before you, they also practice this religion. So you do it as a part of carrying on the tradition. Nothing more than, say, perhaps a July 4th parade that you have in your town every year on, you know, the weekend following July 4th. You have the July 4th parade. It's a tradition. For a lot of people, I think religion is nothing more than another tradition. And so it seems to make sense that you put this in the back seat. We have a lot more pressing matters. We've got a lot more. We're looking, and in many of these countries and many of our nations, it's crumbling. You know, they've flooded the nation with diversity, and we've got to get it back. We got to get our nations back. And then we can have a discussion about the role that religion should play in society. And again, you know, for someone who's a non-believer to have that view, that makes sense. I can't help but be a bit perplexed when I hear people who say they're believers and they'll take along this line of reasoning. That I find that somewhat perplexing. But regardless, I believe it's wrong, because I believe what this is, the error here is essentially focusing on the symptoms and not the root cause of the problem. And that's what I really want to get into today, looking at this in the form of a root cause of the problem. See, the Bible, and in particular the Old Testament, even more specifically, the biblical record of the fall of the historic ancient nation of Israel really serves as a warning, and it shows a pattern of behavior which inevitably leads to the destruction of a nation. Now, I think it bears repeating here, I've said this before, that doesn't necessarily entail God personally looking at you, you know, as an individual, obviously, or as a nation, and just being unhappy with you, and he reaches down and is punishing you with this. God is doing this to you. Remember, we live in this world. This world is a creation. It is created by God, and it is, think of it as a system, and the system is designed to stay in balance and to do certain things. And it's not personal. It's not emotional. It simply tries to keep things in balance. And when you get out of balance, they will be rebalanced one way or the other. And it can use really bad forces to put you back into balance. But balance will be restored. The system will serve its purpose. God is not sitting around micromanaging things of the world. He created the world. It only makes sense that he would create the world to be more or less self-governing, to be a system that functions autonomously, to put things in balance, to keep things in balance and keep things moving forward. This is why in the Old Testament, you're warned over and over to remain, you know, follow God's laws. That's not talking about what food to eat, what days to take off and things such as that. It is talking about operating within the confines of the system, the laws, the natural order, the laws God has established. If you stay within those laws, the laws of how the system we live in functions, you're going to have a better time than when you try to get out of those laws, outside of the parameters of the system. You get outside of those, you know, you can do that for a while, but the system will inevitably start correcting. It will self-correct. And the farther outside you get, the more harsh the correction. Remember, the system isn't personal. It doesn't sit there and look at your individual case and go, that's so sad, I better go easy on these. It's not like that. It just automatically does. If things get out of balance a certain way, the system will apply some form of counterbalance. Again, the historical record of the eventual fall of the nation of historic Israel in the Bible. Again, that has nothing to do with this modern abomination over there. So we don't ever want to get that confused. You see this pattern of the people getting further and further out there until actually the system applies a harsh outside force. The ancient nation of Israel was handed over to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, who was not a good guy. He was not a righteous king. It wasn't a case of, well, this guy, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, he's a really righteous guy, so you're going to be handed over to him. He is doing God's work. He was not any of those things, But yet they were handed over to him. Why? Because that was the harsh counterbalance measure that the system eventually applies to this nation that's gotten outside of the confines of God's laws. When you read what they were doing in historical Israel, ancient Israel, it wasn't just the king doing these things. Yes, the kings would partake in these things as well. But the bigger issue was the people. The people themselves had gotten this attitude. The people themselves had become decadent, sinful, child sacrifice in pursuit of more money, and all of the rest of it. See, the problem came down to the people. Not every single one, of course. There were a remnant who held to the truth. When you look around at your decaying and declining and in a lot more and more ways, self-destructing societies today, and you feel like, you know, you're one of the few that are going off the cliff, that's because you are. You are a part of the modern day remnant if you are trying to hold to what is right, to live your life to what is right. It is a vanity, in biblical terms, a vanity is a pointless thing. It is a vanity to spend your spiritual, mental energy on things you have no control over. Ultimately, you have control over yourself. If you want to change the world, the most you can do is to look at yourself. What am I doing? How am I living my life? Obviously, if enough people do that, then you affect a bigger change. Now, getting down to why I think having the attitude of, oh, well, we can talk about religion after we save our nation, is getting it backwards. You know, you're looking at the symptoms. Your nations are, say, being flooded by migrants from the third world. Your government is becoming more and more oppressive. You know, degeneracy is promoted. All these weird sexual degeneracies are celebrated more and more. This is put out here, pushed by the media. But in a lot of ways, these are symptoms. To put it another way, if your population is overwhelmingly a God-fearing nation of people, my nation, I mean people, not governments. If your people, if you're the inhabitants of your geographical landmass, your nation of people are by and far a God-fearing, God-following people, none of these things can have any effect. You see this increasing paranoia from these governments today. And the reason for that is they're always keenly aware that it doesn't matter how much military and police power and surveillance powers on all of that, they are vastly, vastly outnumbered by the populations they rule over. They are very keenly aware of it. A lot of the fear mongering you see them put out, it is an attempt to keep people cowed down, because if people ever in mass stop going along with the program, it's all over. This gets back to one of the things I harp on probably way too much, and that is the need for legitimacy from any government. This is why they hold these election theaters every so many years, to keep people believing that they have a say-so. Every time you vote, you're voting that the government, that the system you live under, is a legitimate system that serves you. And if you vote the correct way, you can affect the change that you want to have. You're not getting that, obviously, but that's why they do it. That if it wasn't important, they wouldn't bother with it. They would just do away with the elections and just announce to you, this is what we're going to do to you. They don't do that because they have to have legitimacy. Now, I may be getting off on a bit of a tangent, but a person might be tempted to say, well, what about kings in the old days? They didn't have elections. Well, that's because the kings had legitimacy. The king was recognized, usually supported by the church, as being given that position from God. Whether you want to believe that's correct or not, that is where his legitimacy came from. Also, there were checks and balances in place. People, I see people, and they'll say, you know, oh, if you had a king, that would be really awful because he could do anything he wants to. The king could just order you to give him your wife to have sex with, and there's nothing you could do because he is the king. That's not the way monarchies work. The role of the nobility or the aristocratic class or whatever was to keep that in check. A king decided he wanted to implement this, that, or the other policy. I mean, before he decrees that, he has to look at, you know, okay, well, in the nobility, how's this going to go over? Because you have certain factions in the nobility in the palace that you could get trouble stirring up with. If a king, you know, mandated and ordered that your wife needed to be brought to him so he could have sex with her. I don't know why he would want to have sex with some commoner's wife, but so be it. You know, if it's a monarchy that is supported by the church is going to say, whoa, hold on. You can't do that. Your legitimacy. And if the church pulls there, if the church comes out and says the monarch is no longer legitimate, he is violating God's laws, then he's got problems. So, you know, a monarchy is going to function in a lot of ways a lot differently than the so-called democracy system. I see people when you bring up monarchy and they do this whole, oh my gosh, it would be so scary. And they're like, look at what you have today. You know, everything you say you're afraid of from a monarchy, you've got that plus worse times 10 in these so-called democracies today. But the fear-mongering sadly works. To get back on point, they are very much aware that they're vastly outnumbered. And if the people quit buying in and quit cooperating, they're in a lot of trouble. So, as a part of that, the people are off chasing all of these other things. And this gets down to the problem. If you want to look at the problems in your Western nations, you know, be it Britain, America, Germany, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the problem, when you get down to the fundamental core of it, is the majority of your population is a godless people. That's something people, I know you don't want to hear it, but that's the problem. If the population is a godless, now they were encouraged this way, true. And there was decades of programming going in and a intentional effort to make them that way so that they would be malleable and be able to be put in these directions that you see today. That is true. But see, the way the devil works is there's always a choice. You always have a choice. And the people as a group have chosen to do this over and over again. Just use an example. Let's talk about pornography. You know, I don't think any of you listening think that pornography is a good thing. Should pornography be illegal? Well, yeah, I think it should be. I don't think it should be exist in our society today. But even if pornography is legal, you have pornography. I mean, today, it's a whole different world. When I was a kid, the only pornography was maybe like Playboy magazine or something down at the convenience store, and they kept it behind the counter in a plastic cover so nobody could come in and flip through it. And if you wanted a Playboy, you had to go down the convenience store, hope nobody in your community was standing there behind you in the line while you got the girly magazine, and that was your pornography. Now it's everywhere. You can access whatever sort of just absolute, absurdly degenerate, ridiculous pornography on your computer, on your phone, just a few swipes, and you're there. But you see, there's the choice in the matter. In other words, it doesn't matter how, in a sense, it doesn't matter how easily acceptable the pornography is. Because a God-fearing population isn't going to access it. Oh, but temptation. Yes, temptation, that's part of the choice. But a God-fearing people, even if you're a few swipes away from porn, a God-fearing people isn't even going to think about doing that. And your porn sites are going to go broke because nobody's accessing them. They're not getting any traffic. Nobody is putting a gun to someone's head and say, go fap to this porn. It's a choice. That's what this gets back to. What you're seeing playing out in the physical world is a part of the spiritual conflict. It always is. This is just, this world was created for spiritual reasons, and what you see play out is a part of spiritual conflict. The people flock to these things. That's their choice. The devil always, like I say, the devil always gives you a choice. That way you can be accused. You know, you can't claim innocence because you made a choice to do that. Now, that's just one example. We have a lot of problems in society. You know, all of these things. Again, they're reflected because this is what people are going along with. If you refer back to the history of ancient Israel, these weren't just, they didn't become wicked because of different laws created by the king, different mandates from the king. They became godless because the people over and over again chose to chase after vain things, idolatry, which takes on many, many forms. Chasing after money, lusting. Physical lust, lusting after money, putting God further and further as a side character in their history while they have all of these other gods. You know, they would give lip service to the Lord whenever a conflict was coming because they had this history that the Lord, you know, delivered our forefathers in battle and brought them victory. So whenever they were being militarily threatened, suddenly they would dust off their memory of the Lord and say, oh, the Lord needs to come save us. But in their real dedication, they would burn their children alive in Baal's temple in hopes that they would get more money. Now, which quote-unquote God are they more dedicated to? The one that they remember whenever they're in trouble? Or the one they're willing to burn their children alive and take part in an orgy in the temple because they might get some more money out of it? Imagine in ancient Israel somebody saying, We've got to save our nation of Israel. And we can discuss these matters about the Lord after we do that. When you read your Bible, that wouldn't make any sense because it's very clear that the reason they were losing their nation was because they had turned away from the Lord. You can't separate the two. Individualistic decisions on a large enough scale, which you were looking at, when you fret over the collapse of your nations, what you were looking at is the collective, the sum total of the decisions of the population, of the people. If the people didn't decide to go along with it, it wouldn't happen. Yes, I know the government dictates these things and think, but if the people say, I refuse to go along with it, and you go all the way back. Like I said, if it doesn't matter how easily accessible porn is, if people refuse to access it, it doesn't matter. You see, it takes the power. They want to convince you that you're helpless. You're helpless. If it's out there, you've got to go look at it, right? You know, whether it's porn or whatever, I'm using that because it's a real easy thing to illustrate with, that you're helpless. If it's there, you're going to look at it. But that's bullshit. They want you to be helpless. They want you to feel like you're just drifting along with the current, and whichever way they can steer the current, well, you're going to go along with it. But that's a lie. Again, what you were looking at, when you look at the state of the nations you live in, this is the collective result, not of every single individual. No, not of you. I'm not saying this is about you. I'm saying you're that remnant. What you're looking at, this is the result of the collective decisions of your people. It's like I always tell people who are dissatisfied with their lives, you know, they sit around and say, well, you know, all these reasons why their lives suck, and things happen. You know, I get it. You know, external things happen. But on average, for the most part, and nobody ever likes hearing this, where your life is today is more, for the most part, what you were looking at in your life today is the sum average of the collective decisions you have made over your life thus far. You know, it just, and I get people never want to hear that. They don't like hearing it. They want it to be someone else's fault. My life sucks because of everybody else. But for the most part, what your life is the result of the collective decisions that you've made over the course of your life. The sooner you can accept that, here's the good news. The sooner you can accept that and grasp that as the reality, now you're empowered. If you want your life to be different than what it has been so far, then you can say, okay, well, then I need to make, and you can accept the fact that what you're looking at is this is the result of your collective decision making. Then now all of a sudden you're empowered. You're not helpless. You're not just being drifted along. You can say, okay, well, this has been, this has been the pattern of decision making I've made over my whole life, because you do, everybody does. You fall into patterns of decision making. You know, when you face certain challenges or whatnot, you'll fall back on your pattern of decision making. And if it's a poor pattern of decision making, you keep getting these really poor results. Once you are able to accept that your life is the collective sum of your decision making and you don't like your life, now you can say, okay, well, I need to look at my pattern of decision making. And I need to change that. I need to do something. It doesn't matter. I may not know what to do specifically, but I know this. I got to do something different than what I've been doing, because what I've been doing, the decision patterns I have been following have led me to here, and I don't like here. I want something different. So I'm going to start throwing some stuff against the wall. I'm going to try to make some decisions in a different manner that I would have never considered anymore. And even now, I'm not sure that that's even has any possibility of working. But I do know this, what I've been doing hasn't been working. So I've got to do something different. And it's freeing, because once you start doing that, you come closer to finding something. Maybe the first couple of things, you changing your patterns may not work. It may be disastrous, but you're at least making an attempt to break out of this circle you've been stuck in, this turkey trot around in a circle you've been stuck in, doing the same thing, getting the same results. It's that way for a people as well. When you look at the nation, that's, you're looking at the sum total of what the people have decided, their attitude. A godless people are going to wind up with a godless nation. A godless nation will wind up crumbling and falling apart. This is why I think it's silly to say, oh, well, we can discuss religion and things like morality after we save our nations. That's the cause. That is the cause. The sum total. Look, let's just get straight to here. You know, in before, what about the Jews, though? You know, you can spend countless hours talking about Jewish influence over your society, Jewish power. But if you and I were space aliens, if such a thing existed, I don't think it does, but we're using this for an example. Say you and I are space aliens. We're flying in our flying saucer, and we're going to check out, do a survey of some of the nations of this blue planet out here. And we got our ship cloaked. We got our UFO cloaked, so nobody knows we're around. But we can look at all the media. We're able to use our massive computer powers and whatnot to get a really good idea of how a society functions. And if you or I, as space aliens, we observe a nation. And 2% of the population has control over finance, the culture, the government, and it's pretty obvious that they do. It's not even really hidden. And the other 98% are being let off into a ditch, and these nations are falling apart. Wouldn't your reaction be your reaction wouldn't be something to focus on the 2%. Your reaction immediately would be, what the hell is wrong with the 98%? If you're letting, say what you want, and look, I'm not saying they don't control the media. They don't have your governments by and large bought and paid for. These are mainstream talking points at this. It's so obvious. What I'm saying, though, is if you observe this as an outsider completely detached from it, your first reaction would be there's something wrong with that 98%. It's obvious you're going off into a ditch. It's obvious things are getting worse. How come the 2% is calling the shots? They're 2% of the population. I mean, just not do going along with what they want you to do is enough to completely destroy the power. I don't care what kind of media operations they own or how much power and control over banking. That doesn't matter. They're 2%. You're 98%. If just half of the 98% stops and says, we're not living this way anymore, we're not going along with it, the 2% are in a lot of trouble. What the hell is wrong with the 98%? Why are they doing the things that they're doing? When I sat down to have this discussion on the show today, I knew this is going to go over like a turd in a punch bowl because people aren't going to want to hear it. It's real easy to blame somebody else, and that's the comforting thing. It's somebody else's fault. And again, it's just like in your personal life. Look, other people make decisions that affect you, and you don't have control over that. And sometimes those decisions impact your life in a very, very negative way. If, for instance, your wife one day decides that she's tired of you and goes out and starts screwing around and destroys your family, that's obviously going to have a negative impact on you. And maybe you didn't do anything to deserve this. This was simply her decision to do so. You know, it's not that other people don't make decisions that negative impact you. But ultimately, when it comes to yourself, it is you who has. She still doesn't have any control over you, in other words. She might go out and decide to do those things. Now, how are you going to react to it? Because she doesn't have any control over that. You're not helpless. Your wife maybe have turned out to be a harlot and is running all over, running around on you. But she doesn't have any control over you. How you choose to react to that, the decisions you make moving forward from that are all your own. She still doesn't have any control over you. If you just throw up your hands and say, my life is over, this harlot has ruined my life. Oh my gosh, my life. Look, my everything around me is crumbling because of what she did. No, everything around you is crumbling because you decided to crawl off in a bottle and drink every day instead of going on with your life and say, woe is me. My wife is a harlot. You see, you still have control over what you decide to do. Is it terrible that she decided to behave that way? Well, absolutely. Does it negatively impact your life? Absolutely. But you still, at the end of the day, how are you going to live your life is still your decision. This is how it is for an individual person. It's how it is for a collective nation of people. You're looking at what are the collective decision making of the people when they're all hung up on chasing after money, lust, all of these things presented to them, you get these results. And you can, you know, you could do everything you try all of these different things to quote unquote save your people. And I'm going to tell you, if they don't get back within the confines of the system, God's laws, you're wasting your time. I mean, go ahead. I don't have control over what other people decide to do. Go ahead and do that. But you ain't going to have no luck. I'm going to tell you right now. Because at the heart of the matter, there's still a godless people. You know, if you're trying to sway a godless people to your side, what do you got to offer? You know, tradition, self-control, morality? Your opposition is offering unlimited dopamine, gooning to porn. You know? They're offering them if it's just outside of their reach. They could have more money and they'd be somebody. You know? They're got a lot more tempting offer than you do. You're just going to keep spinning your wheels. I'm not trying. I don't intend for this to be like a blackpilling, a downer of a message. My intention is this is a message of empowerment. in my earlier illustration that your wife decided to turn full harlot and go screwing around with everybody in town on you. How are you going to feel more empowered? By crawling off in a bottle, getting drunk every day, and telling anybody who will listen about how miserable you are because of what that woman did? Or are you going to feel more empowered when you get up and say, well, I'm rid of that whore. Now I can go on with my life. Yeah, she wrecked my family. Yep. Now I'm going to go on now, but now I've got a whole bunch of opportunities moving forward because that bitch isn't in my way. What am I going to do today? What kind of plans, what kind of decision making am I going to do today to make my life better? Yeah, she destroyed my house and the family that I had established. Okay, well, now I'm going to build something new. We got a whole new project to build, and it doesn't include her ever again. Once I'm rid of her, I'm rid of her. Now I can move on. Which of those scenarios? You can be blubbering and throwing up on yourself drunk because that woman and what she done to me. She done me wrong. Everybody knows she done you wrong. You're going to be more empowered like that. You're going to be more empowered going, well, that was a lick. That hurt. That was a punch in the face. Okay. Spit the blood out. Now what are we going to do? Now what kind of decision making? You have power. They want to convince you you don't. But you do have power. You're not helpless. And that starts with your power is your power over your own life, your own life. What decisions are you going to make? Start, take control of your life. If enough people do that, and look, you're influencing people by the way you live. You don't know it. People are watching you all the time. You don't have to be moralistic about it. You have to be pushy about it. Just live your life in as godly a manner as you possibly can. And I can virtually guarantee you that there are people around you who don't say anything, but they're watching you and they see how you live your life. They see, man, this guy, he's had a rough go with some stuff. And look at the way he's living, you know? And ain't nothing got him down. You know, he just gets up every day and gets back after the world, you know, just gets back after living his life. The guy's a strong man. And it influences because then men see that and they say, I want to be a strong guy. They look at you and your wife was a whore. And instead of just crawling off in a bottle, you got up and started looking at new opportunities, started getting after life. And they sit around, look at their own problems. And say, oh, I ain't got that kind of problem. What am I whining about? And it can influence people to start living a more godly life. And if enough people do that, you will see some change. Are you going to see it on the scale to quote unquote save your nations, or are they too far gone? I don't know. If I had to guess, I would say probably too far gone, but it doesn't matter. All of this in this world is temporary anyway. This whole thing is about spiritual maturity and where we're going to wind up, the real life that's coming. We live the best life we can, and we're going to get those results. That's what we carry with us. If enough people do that, you will see change in this world. I can guarantee it. But if you think you're going to change what you don't like, the consequences of what's happening without addressing what those are, the actions that these are the consequences of, does that make sense? You can't fix the consequences without addressing what those are the consequences of, the decision making, the morality, the state of people in general. You just can't. It's like I say, if you got a brain tumor and you keep getting headaches, you can probably take aspirin for a while and it may make the headache ease up. But that brain tumor, it's going to get you in the end. You got to address the cause of the problem. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the show today, especially the Christian specific segment. It's always the goal to get something out of that. So I hope you got something out of it. I appreciate you stopping by, and I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.